Blog Talk Radio.
All right. I guess we're live time of the air. It's Rattle Arouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo. It's Renee, the Tony Penny Cow.
And we have Mike sitting on the left.
Hello?
Vacation weekend. Tony and I were there on Sunday. In Brockton, Massachusetts, and it was a pretty good day.
Yeah, for just a moment, who do we have on the air tonight?
Mike Cisnolevich. Okay, now we're back, and we have Tom.
Hey, Tom.
All right, here we are.
So,
Tom, I'm glad you liked the video.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, it just, and especially, it must have been fun just talking to the son of, talking to the sons, and just the memories that this has to bring back, you know. I mean, that was a great job, really.
Thank you. What was great for me is, I mean, obviously Rich has met a lot of these people before, doing work on the Marchana Foundation. This was fun for me to meet a lot of these people. And it was cool, you know, I had my Marchana shirt on. And so when I got...
Okay, so we're back.
Okay.
No, Tom's on here too, right? Tom?
I'm here.
No, I was saying, you know, what's cool for me was, you know, these are people that I never got to meet. You know, some of them I talked to online. So, of course, my big calling card was just talking about my uncle that went to the title winning fight back in 52. And, of course, you know, I always, like, when people see the program, I'm like, yeah, I was there. I was in, like, the fourth row. And they look at me and I say, I age well. And we laugh about it. So I got to tell that to Rocky's youngest brother, Peter. And I got to tell that to Jersey Joe Walcott's two grandsons, Vincent and Billy. And they were very nice. I mean, they were very outgoing. And they were sitting there right by where the statue was. And when people were walking by, they were very outgoing, happy to greet people. So I went up to, I believe it was Vincent, shook his hand, and I was talking to both of them, told them that my uncle was at the title-winning fight. And I'm like, hey, can you get a photo? They're like, yeah, sure, but give me the program real quick so I can hold it in front of your shirt. Showing our grandfather getting knocked out, and so they were cool about it. And you know, of course, getting to talk to Vinny Paz, my dad got to meet him, which is pretty cool. And Larry Holmes, Tom, just a few weeks, you and I were discussing how Larry Holmes was received there back from what happened in 1985. And I remember a time you said, you know, bygones are bygones, pretty much, and you know, hopefully everything will, you know, be okay. And Larry got there. He was charismatic. He was funny. And, he wants to, first, as soon as he got introduced, Rocky's brother Peter came up to him and they embraced.
Wow.
When Larry said that,
goes to show time heals everything. You know,
Absolutely, that is
amazing. Wow.
And because I remember they said, like, when it happened back in 85, now we're going back nearly 30 years ago, and Peter would have been in his early 40s. Early 40s. And there's a thing about it, you know, you could tell he felt bad. And they said, like, he apologized mostly to Peter. And as soon as Larry got introduced, Peter came over and embraced. It was a nice moment. I got a photo of it. And then when Larry got up to do his speech, you know, he was like, man, shit. Yeah, if I could beat anybody, I would say I could. He's like, I'll fight Holyfield right now. He goes, we're both old. I don't care. And he was funny. Don King got up there. Don King was great, you know. His line was like, you know, this is only in America. And, you know, this young man like Rocky, he fought as a Charles, and he couldn't knock Charles out. He couldn't put him down. So he gave him a rematch. And in the rematch, Charles split his nose in half, and the doctor says, Rocky, I've got to stop it. And he goes, no, give me one more round. He goes, okay, Rocky, I'll give you one more round. And Rocky went and knocked him out in that round. Rocky proved there that in America you can do anything if you put your heart to it. He goes, and Rocky never discriminated against anybody. He would knock you out no matter what color you were, black, white, Asian, Hispanic. He didn't care. He was great. And, you know, it was good. I mean, the ceremony was expected to last about an hour. It was going to start around 1. I guess it started about maybe like 20 after. We're still coming in at 1 o'clock, like Larry Holmes and Lee Duva and Mickey Ward. And I'll say it was about almost 3:30 when they did the unveiling. The ceremony went about 2 hours. The Brockton High School marching band was fantastic. My dad was joking around, we were sitting next to each other in the stands. And he goes, the girls with the batons and everything, and everybody doing that. And he goes, if somebody drops a baton, they're going to put every eye in the place seeing them do it. And the one girl, she said it, happened to drop a baton. And she was way in the back. My dad said, she probably feels right now that everybody saw her do that. And he goes, and I'm probably the only one that did. But Jackie is great, you know, 22 feet high, beautiful, you know, Jose Suleiman, for WBC, you know, deserves a lot of credit, you know, for funding that project. And, you know, he had a great speech and, you know, it was just a fantastic day. The weather was perfect. I mean, we left Philadelphia, my father and I, we left Harleysville, PA approximately, 3:30 in the morning. We got to Brockton a little after 10, and, you know, we ended up headed home around 4:30 p.m., got home around 11 o'clock. So it was a long day, but it was well worth it. My dad enjoyed it. I loved it. And, you know, good to see Rich, and, you know, not much more else I can say about it. You know, I'm glad to have been a part of that history.
Yeah, it was a class act on the the whole crew that planned it and everything, and of course the statue looked great. It was just unbelievable the way it looked so much more like him in reality than it did in the pictures that represented. Because I was telling Tony beforehand that I don't think this picture looks like him, and then I look at the statue and it looks a lot like
him. Yeah.
You know, it's perfect too that it was in that form of when he threw the punch on Jersey Joe's chin there. And I like to remind people that during that fight, just before that punch was landed, Jersey Joe was interviewed and he said that he was trying to set up his own right hook right before that punch landed, and you can see him throw it, and then it just kind of dies as he falls to the canvas. And it's his left arm that hooks the rope, but he was going for his equalizer too, and you know, trying to knock him out, and just ended up on the worst end of it. So people forget.
They always say, like, a lot of the strategy of boxing is setting up traps, and you know, certain fighters, like even guys that people don't think of historically as like strategy fighters, I'll give you a perfect example of a guy like Mike Tyson. People don't think of Mike Tyson as a strategist out there. They just think him as, you know, a wrecking ball. But he really was. Like, he was a lot of times, he knew the guys were so afraid of him, so he played the mind game, strategy one. Then a lot of times he would dip to the left, dip to the right, and so you're sitting there, when he dips to the left, you defend your right side. He dips to the right, and he has you defending all different ways, and it's usually the third dip is when he gets the punch. So he would left, right, go to the left side. And he had the guys so fearing of what was coming, they would block what didn't come and be open for what did. Strategy. And that's what Jersey Joe tried to do there. He was backing up, drawing Rocky straight in, and he was saying, you know, and it's something I've done myself. As soon as my ass hits the ropes, I'm firing this punch. And it was just the way Rocky came in, and he put that trigger, and the punch only went 6 inches. And it got there before Jersey Joe, you know, before his ass really hit them ropes, and that was it. Lights out.
Yeah, just an epic guy. Career, just the history is incredible. If you ever get a chance to read about Rocky, definitely pick up a book or two and find out what his life was like.
You know, this shows how fast time goes, because I remember 1985 like it was yesterday, and there was so much raw emotion over that jockstrap comment. I mean, it was just so raw. I mean, yeah.
Came in there, Larry Holmes, like he was in Mike Tyson himself.
Everybody
knew who he was and wanted to meet him. And he had a funny line in his speeches. You know, he wanted everybody to come down to George's Cafe, where all the boxers were before and after the ceremony. And in there, I always tell Tony, I don't think you got a chance to check it out, but there are pictures all over the walls of that place of famous boxers, and documentation from their fights, and just tons of Rocky stuff everywhere. But Larry Holmes was there, and he said, he goes, everybody needs to come down to George's, because if you buy a drink, I get 10%. I mean, it was a joke. It was funny, but it was true. We probably did get 10%, because he was right down there afterwards when I was on my way back.
The call
the place, so.
Rich, were you there when he was apparently coming in the spoon?
No.
Did you see that? I've been Facebook friends with a lot of people in the boxing, you know, field, and then I made more friends from the other day, and people have been posting a lot of photos. I've been sharing my video with pretty much anybody I can find, you know, just, and people have been sharing it also, which is great. And a lot of people have been posting those from.
Okay, we're back. Sorry for the technical difficulties there. I tried to load Sure Dog and all hell broke loose. We're going to talk about that fight a little bit later. We got Mike Sinalevitz waiting probably to chat with us. I'm just going to hang on until we get Tom back, and then I'm going to give him a call. But you were saying about the pictures there, George's, before we cut.
Yeah, I was good. I didn't get to go to George's, but I saw some of the pictures that had been posted, and there was Larry Holmes singing into a spoon, which was, you know, pretty unique and interesting, and and just, you know, you could just tell everybody it was just a great day. You know, it was a great day. Smiles all around, and you know, said I was, and I'll say it again, I was just, you know, happy to be part of it.
Yeah, it was a good day, and it was definitely cool to see it all, and finally see Rocky come back home. That was a nice line by the mayor that it's nice to see you back where you belong, Rocky. So, that's nice. And definitely
how I opened up my heart.
Because I know you got some good pictures on the statue, but I didn't want to jump in front of everybody and get one right next to his leg.
Shut everybody out of the way, you know?
My picture, there's like people behind me next to it. I'm like, I don't care, just take the shot. But, yeah, it was cool. So we're going to get Mikey C. on here. Mike Sisnilevich, the UFC veteran, and he's currently with the World Series of Fighting.
And don't forget, Lock Haven alumnus.
Oh, he is? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. So you have something to talk to him about. It's definitely shaping up to be a pretty good little organization, this World Series of Fighting. We talked a little while ago about the NBC deal for the show.
I thought you were about to say Lock Haven was shipping up the deal, but...
Let's go, Mike.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Figures.
0283980207 is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Mike, this is Rebel Rose with Rich Bergeron, and we're live on the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. We're just trying to get in touch with you for the interview, and we'll give you a try back in another few minutes, so hopefully we'll get you then. Thanks. Bye. So there's another little stumbling block there. I'll have to get back to him, but of course we got to talk about UFC 152, the big fight there. I mean, it showed that John Jones is indeed human. He's not a machine. To paraphrase another Rocky. The movie Rocky.
It almost looked like we had a little bit of Rocky in real life with that armbar for a minute, huh?
Yeah. And Vitor Belfort was ready up until he ended up getting the tide turned back on him and kind of faded in the, I think it was the third and fourth. He just didn't look that great, but I think it was the second that he got the armbar in there. And John Jones seemed to be really favoring it after that. We don't know if it's, you know, officially going to sideline him for any great period of time, but I heard that he was suspended indefinitely until he proves that it's okay. So that's an interesting little sidelight of that fight. It was thought that Vitor did better than anybody against Jones, which was surprising because I thought he was going to get trounced. but Jones did what he does. He just basically got to the point where he figured everything that Belfort could throw at him, and he figured it out and got around his style and ended up getting, I've heard three different names for this submission. I thought it was a Kimura when it started. They called it an Americana and the broadcast, and then here on Sherdog, it's called the Key Lock. So, who knows? It was a great submission either way. Whatever it was. We also had a pretty interesting undercard. You know, Brian Stann had a tough fight against Michael Bisping. I think everybody predicted that Bisping would win. But Brian Stann's just such a popular, well-known guy in the league and in MMA. And, you know, as somebody who served his country, you hate to see him lose any fight, even to a guy of that caliber. But, you know, he also lost to Chael Sonnen, too, a complete douchebag. That's even worse to watch that, but this was tough.
Well, that one, you know, I kind of thought that the longer it went, the better for Bisping, because he does have good lateral movement. And I know he's susceptible to being knocked out, as Henderson showed, but Bisping's a pretty smart guy. And I think he's made some adjustments with his defense. And, you know, Brian had that puncher's chance, but he just couldn't take advantage of when he did have him rocked a bit. And I think on the ground, Bisping, I know Brian's improved a lot. I'm sure he's been working night and day on his ground game, but Bisping's ground game is, I think, underestimated as well. So I thought the decision was fair. I guess Brian was quoted as saying he felt he won it, and he said Dana came up to him afterwards and said, yeah, you think you really won this, but most people didn't see it that way.
All right. Another interruption from the Skype system. Fucking Skype. Anyway, we were chatting about UFC 152 there. I think Tom was about to say that Stan was complaining about the decision. It was a unanimous decision. Three rounds. Went the distance there. I didn't see any disparity in well, who I thought won the fight and how in the unanimous decision. It was pretty clear. Stan had a little bit of a disadvantage, just not as much experience at all. So it is what it is. Matt Hamill came back. He won in his return fight from retirement. He beat Roger Hollett, also by unanimous decision. I did not catch that fight or really any of the other fights except for the top three there, Jones, Belfort, Johnson, Benavidez, and Bisping Stan. You get to watch a lot of the fights. But it was definitely a good card. And we got another one this weekend to talk about a little later. But here's Tom back. What were you saying about the decision?
I think that most people agreed that it was a fair decision, put it that way.
Right.
You know, I know that Stan said he felt he thought he won, and he talked to Dana, and Dana allegedly said to Stan, as per Stan, that, yeah, I think you got the nod, but I didn't see it. I didn't see it that way at all. So.
What can you do? Well, Demetrius Johnson and Joseph Benavidez was just kind of a dud. I thought Benavidez was going to be way more potent against Johnson, but he just couldn't do anything. And a lot of people were talking about the commentator's point that it was Johnson was acting like he was a bullfighter, and Benavidez was the bull. He just kept moving out of the way. And just totally canceled out any advantage Benavidez had with, you know, strength and striking with wrestling and grappling and the works. But just not exciting when it goes five rounds and it's that type of fight.
Well, I guess it would be exciting if you're into point-style karate stuff, you know. That's and from the reports I heard from people that were watching it in bars, they said that the crowd was watching the Bisping fight a little more intently, but then when this one came on, hardly anyone was paying attention, and then it changed when the main event came on. But this this did not do the flyweight division any good. You know, there's always that talk about the lighter guys not having the power, and here we have a guy who did have power, but you know, the old cliche that we know from boxing, your power doesn't do you any good if you can have a big missile, but you need a delivery system. And Benvenuti's just didn't have it on that night, so that's it.
Yeah. this is when he was deployed over in Iraq. And, you know, her and I would always, talk about, boxing, mixed martial arts. We were MySpace friends for a while. We were trying to get Brian on the show. One of the opinions that I came out and said was, I still think this. I remember watching him when he was with WEC, and I was always marveled by his punching power. I remember when he knocked out the Rhino, one punch. It was a left hook, knocked him really silly. And I said, you know what? I bet you he could make a shitload of money in boxing. I said, I would love to train him. You know, you'd have to change his fundamentals. Obviously, a different animal, boxing, mixed martial arts. You'd have to, change the stance, change the way you defend because you're not defending against kicks or takedowns. I said, with his punching power, and, I think I could make a boxer out of him, a good boxer. And then you think in the promoter's way. And I'm thinking like a Don King here, only in America. You get a guy that's a former Marine. He's a decorated war hero over in Iraq, and basically all your heavyweights right now, you got the Klitschko brothers, and, you got these foreign heavyweights. Man, you would put him out there like America's hope. This is the guy to bring the title back to, America, the former war hero. You could make a lot of money with that gimmick going out there,
And sure. Cut out there for a second, Tony. But you need to rewind.
I'll just see. What was the last thing you heard?
Cut out again. What's going on?
Hello?
Yeah, there you are.
I'm saying, what was the last thing you heard?
You said that it could make a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm talking about Brian Stan. I was saying, obviously, I know his wife, and we tried to get him on the show. And just from watching him in the WEC, I saw that he had one punch punching power, knocked out the Rhino, I think, with one left hook. And I was saying, I would love to train him, actually, just to change, obviously, you'd have to change the style going from, you're not defending takedowns or kicks. You'd have to change the footwork around. But I think with his punching power, he could be a tremendous boxer. And also, you go with the promotion out there. This is, the guy. He was a U.S. Marine. He was a war hero in Iraq. He's the guy that's going to bring the title back from the Klitschko's. He's going to bring the title back to America. You could get a lot of promotion on that and make a lot of money doing that. And I was just trying to get Tom's opinion on it.
Yeah, I think I would definitely agree. I mean, like you said, you'd have to make some changes, but... with that kind of power, sure. Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Especially with the gimmick of bringing the title back to America as the hero, just like he was, that would be he's America's honor right here.
Yeah.
Talk about making a lot of money. Kimbo left MMA for boxing, and I don't know if you heard, but he just signed a new fight, and it's an exhibition, apparently, but he's going to fight Roy Jones Jr. Believe that?
Oh, shit, really?
Yes. Mika.
Now, when you say exhibition, are you talking about an exhibition with, headgear and shit, like a sparring session? Or are they going to have, it's going to be an exhibition, but it's going to be, a real fight?
That's what I think. I mean, there's not really much out there about how they're going to handle it, but it does say exhibition. So I'm thinking they only did that. They don't want to risk Kimbo's little undefeated padded record there.
I know when Kimbo on the circuit, a few years ago, trying to make money, and he was doing those exhibitions. I mean, that was, literally full-on, full-blown exhibitions. you know, headgear, the big 16-ounce gloves, shit like that. And also, I know, Rich, we talked about it this weekend. I don't know if Tom was aware. When we were talking to Bobby Chez last week, we were talking about the last fight of his career. He lost to Corey Sanders. I was talking about the two Corey Sanders, the one that Tyson fought the exhibition series with, and the other one was a South American fighter that beat Vladimir Klitschko and knocked him out in two rounds back in 2003. And we confirmed it was the South African, Corey Sanders. And by sad irony, he was murdered the very next day.
Yeah.
In South Africa. In the robbery, yeah. So just a quick rest in peace, and God bless the soul of Corey Sanders.
Yeah, that was kind of a
weird story.
Shot in the stomach. And it's a terrible situation there. I don't know what they were trying to steal or what was going on there, but somebody tried to rob him and shot him in the process. It just makes no sense. You know, if you're going to try to steal something, the last thing you want to do is shoot somebody, because that's a sure way to get caught.
Yeah, for sure.
But I was just working on trying to connect with Mike here. Just dealing with Skype being wicked slow. But while we wait, I just wanted to mention this World Series of Fighting. I was talking about it, I think, once before we got cut off. That they've got the NBC deal for their first major fight card, I guess. I'm not sure exactly when that is, but they also signed former Strikeforce veteran there, Lyle Beerbaum. I think we've had him on the show before. I'm pretty sure at some point we had him on. But Mike is their newest acquisition. They've also got a bunch of other UFC vets and big names. And it's definitely going to shape up to be a pretty decent setup. And then there's another story I'm going to talk about in a few minutes here about Invicta combining forces with one of the other offshoot leagues here. Seems like next year is going to be a real big test year for the UFC, because you've got Bellator moving over to Spike. This Dana White and Spike TV here having a little arguments back and forth. He's still pissed off over their breakup. And, of course, Spike still has the rights to use UFC content through the rest of 2012. So in 2013, it's going to turn into the Bellator network. And Bellator is going to move from MTV to there. So, and then they're also going to do a reality show that's designed by the same people that did The Amazing Race. Definitely going to be a big test period to see if the UFC is really as strong as they think it is. But on that note, I did want to also mention that the Ultimate Fighter episode last week, if the premiere wasn't bad enough, last week they had only 872,000 viewers. They didn't even crack a million.
Wow. And, you know, this whole thing of Bellator going to Spike, I guess this would close the door on the UFC going back to Spike. You know, there's more and more talk about that this whole Fox thing may have turned out to be, the quote that I read was fool's gold. And this whole thing about Fuel TV has really got so many people upset, because they don't want to spend the extra money to get one channel that they would never watch were it not for the UFC, and it just seems like it's just not working so far, and the ratings, I think, bear that out. So, like you said, it'll be a very interesting year.
I did see an article that suggested wiping out the whole format of TUF, but I don't think that's the problem. Whatever it is, as far as the networking and the advertising, I don't know. I know that they do advertise on football for the UFC, but I don't think I've seen an Ultimate Fighter promo on that. I think it's mostly the cards and events that they talk about. So that's part of the partnership, I guess, is good for them. But when you have these channels like FX and Fuel that not everybody has in their cable system, I think you're just going to naturally run into trouble. And Spike, I think, is a much more popular channel, so they never really had problems there.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I guess, I mean, once you get to a certain point with that show, you've really seen all there is to see in all these divisions, because you've done all the divisions, and yeah, people develop every year, and new kids come out, and there's always, you know, interesting people and fighters that you might have never seen before who come out of the woodwork, but it just seemed like, you know, they have so many contestants that have already been through that show, and you don't ever come back on the show unless it seems like, I think the last season there was a guy that came back because he got injured in the first time and didn't get to continue fighting, so they brought him back, and they brought another guy that has the same thing happen to him. You know, between the coachings themselves, the first they fight to get in the house, and then they're in the house, and yeah, a lot of people think, you know, they just feed them beer and want them to destroy the house every year because that's the way to get ratings. I don't know what the problem is really with why people aren't watching. I mean, I figure if you're a fan of the UFC, you want to watch it no matter what. And I haven't heard any excuses of why people just aren't tuning in this year, but my big thing was the date of the day, Friday. I just don't think people are, number one, into staying home on Friday. Nobody wants to stay home. Everybody wants to go out on Friday night. It's the start of the weekend, you know? So I think
exactly.
That's one
thing. Yeah.
And then, you know, as far as the live format, we talked about how that didn't work. And I understand why they left that behind, especially for the safety of the fighters. Now that it's taped, it's probably going to be a lot better for them because they'll have a better final show or finale card when they finally get to that point. And in that situation, you're not going to have a guy who's just fought the week before. You're going to have a guy who's been off for a few months because the show's finally airing now. So we'll see. I don't know if they can really do anything about it now. It's too late to, really to change the day. This is the second season they've done it on this day. They can't change it this season, but maybe next season they might want to look at a different day.
Yeah, exactly, because I really think that Friday night thing, because it's bad enough. I mean, I know that whenever I have a new relationship, she's always saying, oh, we got to watch this again, you know. And when it's adding Friday onto it, I'm not saying it's the factor, but it is a factor. I don't think anyone can argue that.
And I still think you need the format because you need to bring new faces into the UFC. And right now, I think they're really having an identity crisis and just all kinds of other regular crises because they just don't have enough people that are at the top who can cycle through for these championship bouts. I mean, you've seen John Jones now. He's only had about, I think, four or five title fights, and he's already out of people to fight, really. Now they got to bring Chael Sonnen up, the next logical opponent. It's bumping up anyway, but you know, you're going to have this happen in a lot of different weight divisions, and it's just really hard to believe or to imagine. You know, who's going to come out of the woodwork and go for these titles if they don't keep developing it, developing the talent through the show. Get new faces in there who can stick around for a while. And they usually keep at least five or six guys from every show. And those guys might have one or two fights. They might have full careers in the UFC. So I definitely don't think they should get rid of that whole idea and that format. But maybe change the day. Maybe look at you know, some of the other things they might be able to do to get ratings. Maybe a better advertising platform might be in the works. We don't know. But when you have that partnership with that kind of a network, you definitely could do better with advertising. And it's really not the UFC's responsibility when you think about it. I mean, it's kind of FX and Fox in general that maybe needs to do better in getting people to put eyeballs on the show. What can you do? But it was definitely a good fight last week. They tried to do a mismatch with the coaching. Roy Jones picked a guy I think he thought his guy could beat, and if I remember correctly, I always kind of go into a blur the next week who made the wrong choice. I think it was Roy Jones.
Roy Nelson.
But, yeah, it was definitely underestimated the guy who won. Well, we're going to try Mike one more time here as soon as I get this number saved back in. Okay, here we go. Mike Cisnolevitz, he was in the UFC for a couple fights. He was 16-3, I think, when he ended up getting his first shot in the UFC. He fought Neil Grove and beat him in his debut. Yeah, a really good fight. Injured him pretty badly, too, I think, with his submission. But he's with the World Series of Fighting now. They're making a lot of news. Definitely looking forward to finding out what happens with that league and who else they get on board. And as Tony said, he's a Lock Haven alumni.
Lock Haven alum.
And did you go to school when he was there, or was it before or after? What was that, Tony?
It was my last semester there. It was when he was a freshman.
I don't know if he answers his phone.
Call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 7028398027 is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Mike, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron again from the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. We're still trying to reconnect with you. If you can return this call at some point before 10 o'clock Eastern, it's right around 9:07 Eastern right now, I think. You could just give us a call on the direct show line. It's 347-324-3228. And we'll see your number come up, and we'll just turn the microphone on. That'll probably work best for us, so we don't have to keep trying to call you. But we're looking forward to talking to you. If we don't catch you this week, hopefully we can reschedule for next week. Thanks a lot. Bye. So what can you do? We're having a tough time there, I might see.
What happened? No one.
Let's check out our lineup for the week. You know, I had a lot of stuff going on. I did look back. I saved the article from the Corey Sanders incident. It looked like they were eating. His family, he was out with his family eating, and they were at a restaurant, and somebody came in to steal from the restaurant. And I think all they got away with was like a digital camera, and they just sprayed the whole shots, and just one of them hit somebody, and it was Corey Sanders. It's crazy.
You know, I believe he retired after that last Klitschko fight, didn't he? Was that it for him?
again. Back again. This guy sucks. What?
Can I ask you guys' opinions on something real quick?
Sure. Well, Tom's not in yet, I don't think.
Okay, well, I'll ask yours and I'll ask Tom when he gets on. I found this job online and I'm applying for it, and it's asking for my title and my current employer. Say, like,
yeah.
I have none?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's discriminatory. I don't have one. I title in an employer, and I think they want me back, and I told them to go fuck themselves.
You could write self-employed. Just happened to be self-employed at nothing.
Yeah, good. I could be a boxing trainer and radio show personality.
Exactly. Floyd Mayweather again. I sent you a link. I don't know if you got a chance to read that story, but I've always said that once they settle that defamation suit, it's going to be close to fight negotiation time. And they just did. They just settled the defamation suit finally. And here's Tom just in time to talk about that one. But they wiped out the defamation suit, and looks like Pacquiao got exactly what he wanted out of it. He had the Mayweathers apologizing and issuing statements that they didn't think he was on drugs at all, and this, that, and the other thing. And I don't think Floyd ever really was planning to participate in the case. He was, I think, banking on that very situation that just happened where the fight is pretty much going to happen after their next fights, whatever Floyd's is, we don't know, but after the Marquez fight for Pacquiao, I think it's bound to happen now. They've set this aside and made it a point to fix that situation, and I always thought that they could never have a fight without that case settled, so... That's
ladies and gentlemen, you heard it first. Rich said it's bound to happen. I'm quoting you on that one, buddy, and I'm holding you to it. Ladies and gentlemen, let's make a note. What is this? September 27th, okay? At 9, what, 9:20? Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
Well, I think like 50 Cent is a secret weapon here because, you know, as soon as he went over to Floyd's camp, from Floyd's camp to Pacquiao's, I think... This is my theory. I think basically Pacquiao realized, all right, 50 Cent here, he's in music. I like music. You know, he's got a ton of money. I got a ton of money. I'm running out of room here for my boxing career. I got to fight Floyd and pretty much retire. What am I going to do next? I could be the president of the Philippines eventually, but I got to do something in the meantime. Why not be a promoter? You know, it gives me a chance to stay in boxing. And of course, 50 Cent never really had a falling out or anything with Floyd. He's just he's in a different mindset since he got out of prison, so he's not really, you know, holding down his business and doing all that stuff. He's probably trying to just take more time out to spend with his family and, you know, doing some personal things. But I think Floyd is now going to see this 50 Cent flirting with Pacquiao and think, geez, you know, if all three of us got together in the long run, we would kick Golden Boy's ass. All over the place. And I think Golden Boy, when it came out, it was a great concept. You know, here's a former fighter in the promotional biz, and I think a lot of fighters appreciated dealing with a guy who was in the ring himself. So you double that with Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, and they're just going to be unstoppable. And I think that's eventually going to happen once they retire. And, you know, they've already moved past this slander issue or defamation. So if they could actually become business partners in addition to opponents, that would be pretty major. But you never know, we could have a trilogy before that happens.
Yeah.
Depends on what happens in the fight, I guess. So that was an interesting little bit of news I saw this week. I like to point out that when I wrote articles about the situation too, I always said that they have to solve that first. So I was right about that. The chicken came before the egg there. We'll see what happens next. Gina Carano is back in the news, MMA star, sexy female MMA star there who went and decided to stop getting punched in the movies. And she punched back in the movies, too. She had actually not even just an appearance, a starring role in Haywire, a little spy thriller there. And now she's preparing to do the Fast and Furious franchise with Dwayne Johnson, former that's a lot of interruptions here we've had, but you guys remember what you heard last? We're still talking about Pacquiao and Mayweather?
We were talking about that, it was going to happen, and then immediately after that, we lost it.
Okay. Well, I think the next thing I was trying to talk about was we had a story here on the Sergio Martinez versus Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight.
Yeah, definitely didn't get to that.
So, all right, well, we didn't get to that. So, basically what I was saying before that about Pacquiao and Mayweather, if they ever got together and created a partnership with 50 Cent, I mean, there you have the top music guy, two of the top of all time boxers in the world right now living. And you know, after their fight, if they get together and they do this and do it right, I think it will be even better than Golden Boy. And I thought a lot of boxers really appreciated Golden Boy because, you know, they're run by a guy who has been in the business, has been in the ring, and fought. But after his alcohol situation and subsequent, you know, treatment and everything like that, I think he's not as intense as he used to be. He's not as close to the fight game as he was. And I think he's kind of fallen a step a little bit from when he started Golden Boy. So I think it's really good timing for Pacquiao and Mayweather and 50 Cent here to do this and get it done and have this fight. I think the only person who's going to be pissed off is Bob Arum. But speaking of Bob, here's a story. We talked about last week Sergio Martinez versus Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and how Chavez Jr. almost had him knocked out in the last round. Well, he's tested positive for marijuana after the fight, and it seems like he might be having some of the same difficulties with substance abuse that his father struggled with, even though I did read a couple touching stories about how those two reunited and, you know, the son really saved the father from his alcoholism and got him into treatment and really straightened his life out. So hopefully the son can do the same thing with this deal here. But it was interesting the way Bob Arum responded to this whole controversy, because this is exact quote. The commission let Top Rank's Carl Moretti know Tuesday night that he tested positive. I can't really get excited about it. There's no promoter in boxing who could pass the marijuana test, including myself. Julio is going to have to explain to the commission what happened, and the commission will be guided accordingly. If there was a trace of marijuana to me, it's not the same as using a performance-enhancing drug. That is cheating. So he's had this issue in MMA with Nick Diaz, and you know, he had the opinion that he could take it medicinally, and that the commission would forgive him for it. But, you know, we all know now he's currently on suspension for it, so it's not going to fly, medicine or otherwise. But it's one of those borderline things. I agree with Bob Arum in one respect, that it's not a performance-enhancing drug. But it's definitely something you should not be on when you're fighting. Yeah, just, you know, whether it relaxes you or makes you fall asleep, either way. Not good to be on while you're fighting. But then there's also the other thing is, you know, how much of it was in his system. And did he smoke right before the fight, or was it residual effects from another time? I don't know. But, yeah, that was an interesting story. And one of the funniest comments on that story, this guy, G.J. Dodger, I don't know who he is, but right. So you went to Harvard, Bob. You're supposed to be using acid. Talk about Bob Arum. And I bet Don King, who we saw this weekend, couldn't pass that test either.
I think today, you know, Don King should just go get ordained as a minister just so he can give Sunday morning sermon. Because he'd be awesome. He would be awesome. You know, you get him on a topic and you just let him go.
He just preaches without a license. Okay, so I mentioned earlier Super Fight League. Or I mentioned Invicta was going to combine with someone in a Super Fight League, SFL. And Invicta came out as the all-female fight club. They kind of had a little bit of struggles, but their founder, Shannon Knapp, claims they're doing major views on their streamed events online. So that's where their claim to fame, I guess, is starting to build. But Super Fight League has had some criticism this last year for using Bob Sapp one of their cards, I guess. And Sapp is been famous for being the biggest guy to take the hardest fall lately. Just seems like he just goes in there to be a punching bag, and he looks like the last type of guy who should be treated like a punching bag.
So what was the criticism specifically on this? That Sapp doesn't belong in there? Or?
I guess. This article says Super Fight League was torn to shreds for using Bob Sapp in what was one of the biggest shams of the year. I don't know exactly which fight they're talking about, but, I mean, just pick a Bob Sapp fight and it's a sham. Lately, anyway. I know he's had some good fights in the past, but, I don't know. So, hopefully as a team, they'll do better. We'll see. But SFL currently lists 17 women under contract on their website. Of those 17 women, 4 have yet to make their MMA debut. Of the remaining 13, the most recognizable name is Ukrainian kickboxer Lina Ovchinnikova. And if you don't know who she is, that's because she's 0-2 in the promotion. So, that's I guess they get a lot of work ahead of them. So we talked about earlier the Roy Jones Jr. fighting Kimbo Slice, and here's the article here, so let me see what else I can add to that. It's going to be in December in Jamaica, I think Montego Bay, and it's going to be put on by a promotional company called Geomax Entertainment Company. And, of course, big name sponsor down there is Stewart's Auto Sales. They're going to be the second co-promoter on this. So it's a car salesman gig. I don't know whether you should believe it. I guess Jones is having a tough time lining up fights if he agreed to this.
Now here's my question. How do we get to see this? Or do we get to see this?
I'm sure I'll find that out when we get closer. This December is a little bit off, but this just came through the airwaves, so I'm sure they're still in the planning stages. But I know people are definitely going to want to see this.
Well, I mean, sometimes you can watch for the competition, but then there's always that spectacle, you know, and that draws people in. And I confess, yeah, I like the spectacle too. So.
And when we do get information, of course, we'll put something on the blog, and we'll talk about it on the show. But Jimbo has a 5-0 record, going against a guy who's been in the boxing game forever, really, in all different kinds of weight classes. And Jones Jr. has been fighting a lot of guys down in Florida, and his Squared Ring Promotions, I think, is his company. So he's been promoting his own fights. And this kind of makes sense for, you know, that course of action for both guys. But as an exhibition, I don't know how intense it's going to be. I would definitely favor Roy Jones Jr. no matter what. But, you know, could be a WWE exhibition type of thing. In Jamaica. Here's another story about Dana White. MMAfighting.com had a little interview with him recently, and he says that people who didn't like the flyweight fight the other night are morons. This is his exact quote. Let me tell you what. If you didn't like that flyweight fight, please, I'm begging you, don't ever buy another UFC pay-per-view again. Don't ever buy another one. I don't want your money. You're a moron. You don't like fighting. You don't appreciate great talent or heart if you didn't like that flyweight fight.
Yeah, that's great marketing strategy. You want to tell your audience what they should like instead of giving them what they do. Yeah, unbelievable to say that. Just unbelievable to say that.
You're a fucking moron.
Yeah, he's calling his own customers morons.
In other words, if people didn't want to see 5 rounds of pitter patter, they're morons, and they paid to see some excitement. Yeah, got it. That's infuriating.
And for a guy who's so opinionated, to say somebody who criticizes something is a moron. I mean, it's like really.
Well, how many fights has he criticized in the past? For lack of action, and you know what I mean? And now all of a sudden...
Fights that didn't deserve it.
Right. And all of a sudden, now here's one that does deserve it by any objective standards. I mean, I don't mean to be this critical, but you got to go with what you see. And people don't want to see point karate style, you know, tag, a game of tag. They don't want to see it. I mean, that's why karate tournaments are in high school on Sunday afternoons, you know? The high school gymnasiums. People don't watch. Oh, well.
I got to disagree with you on that one. If you go back to the original Karate Kid when they had that karate tournament, that was the talk of the town. I mean,
well, yeah, I would say in the old days.
You know, I'm on a tangent here, but they remade the Karate Kid, and they put it in, like, China with Will Smith's kid and Jackie Chan, and I had to read subtitles. I don't watch a Karate Kid movie to read subtitles. Even the one they based over in Okinawa, I think it was part two, they spoke in English, which is what I want. You know, I don't want to go to a movie to read. I want to go to a movie to see Karate Kid, goddamn.
You tell us how you really feel.
I told you I was wired up on caffeine tonight.
But no, we're not morons. We just, I mean, if you don't like something, you don't like it. That has nothing to do with whether you're smart or not. You know, you don't like it. So it doesn't even make sense that he called people morons for not liking this fight.
Yes, let me ask you a question. Name a food that you do not like.
Name a food?
Yeah, food.
I guess spinach. I'm not a big spinach fan.
Well, you know what, Papa? I love spinach. So you're a moron for not liking
spinach.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, that would tell people how you don't like his favorite food.
Another bad piece of news for Zuffa in general, the UFC parent company. Strikeforce had an event canceled. Gilbert Melendez was going to be facing Pat Healy in the main event on Sunday night. They canceled it. Melendez suffered an injury in training and was forced to pull out of the fight. And Showtime had the ability to decide which events that they air on their network, so they decided not to air it, which made it pretty easy to cancel the card because there was really no other option for television viewing for them. You know, you can move UFC fighters over to Strikeforce, but you can't move Strikeforce over to Fox. It's not going to happen. But basically, they just wished Gilbert a speedy recovery. They did take the unprecedented step of paying all the fighters, which was very weird, but very appropriate, I think. They can afford it. So they paid everybody not to fight for once, instead of to fight. So that was cool. But it's another indicator that Strikeforce is on shaky legs, which I think Zuffa wants. You know, that's my theory. They don't want to fold it in because they can't to the UFC. So they just kind of wanted to die on the vine, basically. And they're not gonna go out of their way to preserve it if it does fail. I think that's the only way that they can just kind of fold it in at that point. Is when it looks like that's the only thing they can do, unless they're going to disband it. And they really think that had to be written somewhere into the bargaining for the company to make sure that it doesn't just fold in like Pride. Even though that didn't really fold, it folded before it folded in. But yeah. Dana White also made the news for saying Spike TV is the worst channel in the history of the world.
Ooh, what an ugly divorce. What an ugly divorce.
If his moron comments weren't bad enough. And it all swirls around The Ultimate Fighter, the flagship reality show that first launched on Spike in 2005. And, of course, we talked about last week, they had the lowest audience ever for a season premiere on FX. They had a Wednesday night slot on Spike TV, and Dana White explained that FX has so much original programming that they have to put The Ultimate Fighter where it fits best, and right now that's on Friday night. But Spike TV doesn't have room to criticize anybody's ratings or programming choices, according to White. He says, you know who keeps leaking this stuff out and all the negativity is Spuke TV. And saying instead of Spike, Spuke. These guys don't have a expletive program on that show to save their life. It's the worst channel in the history of the world. Nothing they do on that channel works. And he said that following UFC 152 on Saturday. Where FX has such a powerful network, they want us on Fridays. And White says that The Ultimate Fighter debut was still number one in the key demographic of 18 to 34-year-old males. And FX sees the show as a big success in terms of their programming goals for Friday nights. So maybe that's the problem. FX is satisfied where they maybe shouldn't be. I read this earlier. I didn't actually kind of really let that sink in, that line, that they think it's a big success for their programming. Maybe that's just they don't get that much for anything else on that day, so they think it's great, so they don't feel like they have to work hard to promote it. But you know, if you're making the UFC look bad because they're not getting the ratings they used to, you might want to think about doing something so you keep that partnership going. But what can you do? Also, I forgot to mention earlier when we talked about Pacquiao versus Mayweather. Pacquiao has suddenly changed his opinion about the splits and the agreements as far as what he's willing to take. He says he can have Mayweather can have more money. He can get top billing. He can pull up a seat and watch Pacquiao take his steroid tests, and he can even choose the food at the pre-fight press conference if he wants. Here's Pacquiao's line. He could even wear my trunks if it gets him in the ring with me, Pacquiao said. I want to fight Floyd Mayweather next. So, maybe we'll see that in 2013. So I think the last attempt that they had to make this fight, Mayweather was pretty outrageous in his demands. I think he wanted, like, all the pay-per-view. And then he was just going to pay Pacquiao, like, a flat sum or something. I forget what the deal was. But now Pacquiao is offering to take 45% of the purse to 55% from Mayweather. So that should help, too. I definitely think 50 Cent has something to do with it. Because he knows Mayweather already. And then he's friends with Pacquiao, so... I think he's the secret go-between there between these guys. And if Bob Arum doesn't squash it somehow with ridiculous demands or something, I think we'll see this fight in 2013. Maybe by May if we're lucky. But that's only if Pacquiao beats Marquez.
Yeah, that's a diff. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
You know it's definitely going to be the last time they fight.
Yeah, hope.
How many other people have fought five times besides Jake?
Well, and, like I said, LaMotta and Robinson fought six. And what was that? Jack Britton and like Ted Lewis back in like the early 1900s fought 22 times.
What? Oh my God.
Yep, 22 times. Like I said, I think it was Ted Lewis and Jack Britton. 22 times. Jesus Christ, that was moved in with each other. Some of the two brothers right there, battle them every day. The first Pacquiao Marquez fight, I was at a wedding that night, so I didn't see it live. And I didn't score that one. Even when I watched the replay, I didn't score it, which I should have. Because it was, one judge had it 115-110 Pacquiao. The other judge completely opposed him, 115-110 Marquez. And the other judge, I think, was like either 112-112 or 113-113. I don't remember off the top of my head. But that was the fight where you had Pacquiao drop Marquez three times in the first round. But for the majority of the rest of the fight, it was Marquez was kind of controlling the action with good counterpunches. The second fight I did score, and that one I had Pacquiao winning, 115-112. And that was mainly on the strength of that third round knockdown. And he caught Marquez hard with that shot. It was Marquez walked into like an overhand left, similar to the punch that knocked out Ricky Hatton a year later. And I mean, he got up, and I give him all the credit in the world for that because that was a solid punch. And then he got hit again before the bell, and he actually walked to a neutral corner. The fight this past year, unfortunately, I did not have an opportunity to sit down and score. I wish I did. I did see a lot of the highlights, almost I didn't get to see it live. And actually, there was two trains of thought on that one. There was the majority of the people that thought Marquez schooled them and, you know, just comprehensively, you know, outboxed them and countered the shit out of them. And then there was the majority that was saying that they believed Pacquiao won. I know the coach from Coast Guard, Tom Burrell, he thought Pacquiao won that fight. Another friend of mine, Gustavo Puglisi from Lock Haven, he thought Pacquiao won that fight, and they both had compelling arguments. So, you know, you listen to certain people. Like whenever I read blogs now, I read blogs that come from respected people. You can have some teenager sitting in front of his computer that doesn't know his hand from his ass sitting there. And so-and-so's kicking this guy's ass and this and that. And it's like, dude, shut the hell up. You don't know what you're talking about. I remember watching a fight years ago. I think it was a Bernard Hopkins fight when he fought Trinidad. And Hopkins boxed brilliantly that fight. He set Trinidad to come in, and then he just picked him apart. And I remember watching it with my cousin's boyfriend was over, and he was trying to act like he liked boxing, you know. Like, we'd be watching the fight, and he'd be just drifting off and, you know, just zoning out. And he's like, I don't know why Hopkins is fighting like this. He ought to be fighting like Marciano would in that fight. I said, really? I said, why would he press the action and try to turn it into a slugfest when he's clearly winning it by boxing the slugger? And, you know, why would he want to trade with him? I thought other guys, well, why doesn't people fight like Tyson does anymore? I said, because that's a very unique style. You know, I wouldn't train a guy to fight like Tyson unless he had the speed and the power and the build to fight like Tyson. I wouldn't take a 6'2" kid that's 140 pounds and try to train him to fight like Mike Tyson. That's stupid. I guess I'm calling people morons now, too.
Well, not for not liking stuff. Anyway, we have UFC on Fuel TV 5 coming up on Saturday, and this looks like a better card than some of these pay-per-view fights we did the other night. There's 3 undefeated fighters on this card. 9-0-1 Gunnar Nelson. The second preliminary fight of the night. He's fighting DeMarcus Johnson, who's 15-11. Let's see, we got Jimmy Manua, who I've never heard of, but his picture on Sherdog looks pretty mean. He's 11-0, fighting Kyle Kingsbury, and he's 11-4. And I'm looking forward to checking out that fight. I think he's going to be making his UFC debut, this Jimmy Manua. Yeah, he's been at Bama and UC MMA prior to this. No big names on his record, but looks like it's only 2 of his fights have gone into the second round. Knockouts, pretty much, except for one fight. All knockouts, except for one submission against Jamie Hearn in February of 2009. So, yeah, he looks like a nice little prospect there. We didn't see him on the Ultimate Fighter, but he's coming in anyway. Let's see what weight he is. But, let's see. Oh, 205 pounds. There you go. There's just another, guy who might contend for John Jones' belt someday, and he didn't come from the Ultimate Fighter. There you go. Maybe they don't need the show. Okay, so we have Dan Hardy back in action. He's the co-main event. He's 24-10 against Amir Sadola, who's 6-3. But don't let that record fool you. He's pretty damn good in there. And he's always entertaining. Every time I see him fight, he does fight on a lot of the free cards, but he definitely gives fans their money's worth. Stefan Struve, the skyscraper, is at the top of the card. He's the main event against another undefeated guy, Stipe Miocic, I guess. I'm not pronouncing that right, but he's a 9-0. Stipe, yeah. I'm not even pronouncing the first name right. For I thought it was the last name I was having trouble with.
Yeah.
Okay, so Stipe.
And speaking of which, we have a verbal commitment from both him and Marcus that hopefully within a show or two after Saturday we'll be talking to them, just to get that out.
Awesome.
So we'll keep going here.
Hopefully we'll
connect. Yeah.
Yeah, we had not such good luck with the boxing schedule that we had there. We still never got Ray Mercer on. I never heard why, but we got a great interview from Bobby Chiz last week, and hopefully we'll get Mike next week. I haven't seen his number on the call list, so I don't think he got the message. And knowing these MMA guys, he's probably training or sleeping because he trained too hard today. But so on the Fuel TV card, we have Brad Pickett versus Eve Jibun. Pickett's 21-6, Jibun's 18-7. And another undefeated guy on the card here, we got Paul Sass, who's 13-0, fighting Matt Wyman. He's 14-6. John Hathaway, 16-1, with, I don't know what that loss was, but he's another guy that always fights pretty tough. He's fighting John McGuire, who's 18-3. We got Shea Mills, who's 14-5, fighting Dwayne Bang Ludwig, who's 21-13. Ultimate Fighter alum Andy Ogle, who's 8-1, fighting Akira Korasani, who's 9-3. We got Tom Watson, 15-4, fighting Brad Tavares, who's 8-1. And we have Gunnar Nelson, 9-0-1, fighting Demarcus Johnson, who's 15-11. And finally, Jason Young versus Robbie Pugh. Young's 9-5, Peralta's 15-3. So, it's free TV for whoever has Field TV, but good luck with that, as I don't have it. I'm going to be watching it on my computer. My only choice there. But anyway, that UFC on Field TV 5 card, it's from Nottingham, England. So I'm sure they're going to have it on some kind of alternating schedule between over there and over here. I don't think it'll be live over here. So get your bets in early, I guess. Or don't tell anybody that it's on delay and find out what the results are and then have a party and bet with your friends who don't know.
Well, if they don't know, they deserve to just give the money up.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the extent of what I had prepared. I was thinking we were going to have at least a 30-minute interview in here, so I guess I'm underprepared for an emergency. You guys have anything else?
No, I'm starting to crash. You're
starting to crash?
Yeah, my dumbass, Dylan. I've been actually getting back into the running, and I've been, you know, doing some workouts downstairs, working on the bag, and then doing some days with like weights on my ankles and 3-pound hand weights, just shadow boxing, you know, for round after round after round, and it's been feeling great. You know, I'm getting a good heart rate going, getting a good sweat going. Late last week, me being the Einstein I am, I go run a couple miles, do some sprints, feel pretty good, go to Wawa, walk out of Wawa and fall off the curb and sprain my ankle. But not bad enough that, you know, I couldn't go home and train that night, which I probably shouldn't have. And then not taking my rest like I shouldn't. So aside from my two hobbled up knees bothering me, now my ankle's bothering me. What do? Oh, I just strap the fucking weights on and just keep on going. Because I got 30 days from today to still lose 600 pounds.
600?
At least.
You don't even weigh 600 pounds.
Well, it's going to be a challenge now, won't it? My friend's wedding is 1 month from today, and I want to get my fat ass in shape. Now, we haven't even tried the tuxes on yet, which I guess is a good thing because I'm still trying to lose some weight before I get mine fitted. And I'm actually on my Facebook now looking at the one photo that they all disagreed on, which I thought I picked the perfect tuxedo. I found a T-shirt tuxedo at Walmart last week, and I...
Somebody's wearing one at the Rocky Marciano thing.
Were they really?
Yeah, they were back with the Dignity.
Oh, they did. Oh, that's great.
I forgot to mention, too, I thought it was very fitting for the family there and the kids behind the speakers to be playing football the whole time, you know, since Rocky was a big football player himself. And
They could have been playing baseball, too, because I think that was the sport of passion.
I think that would have been more dangerous.
True. You know, it was great. They had posted the one photo on one of the websites. And I looked at it, and I can see myself in the stands.
Awesome. I videotaped John Scully videotaping the crowd at one point.
you know what's great, though? The picture that I can see myself in, you know why? Because of the hat that I'm wearing. The red and green hat stands out.
Yeah, he was like, "Where's Waldo?" You know, you can see him in any picture.
That's right. That's his name.
But anyway, we got a 90-second warning there, so we want to sign out till next week. We'll try to reschedule with Mike. And, of course, we want to congratulate the NFL referees and wish them good luck. That was awesome to learn that they're coming back.
Ask him if he remembers me.
Who? Iceman?
Because Mike, Yeah, because he had come out for the boxing team, and I was actually coaching him for a little bit.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll ask him hopefully next week.
Ask him if he remembers me. All right, well, till next week, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages.
Hasta la vista.
All right, guys. As always, let's enjoy the fights.